I'm getting calls from medical school applicants, those wanting interview prep, those perhaps on a wait list or deferred list, those who have been rejected or are fearing rejection and are thinking they better prepare for a reapplication effort, and finally, those who have yet to apply but are planning to do so this summer. To complicate matters this year, this summer will be the first year of MCAT 2015 and evaluating applicants using two versions of the MCAT exam. Well, in this period of flux and transition, I thought it would be great to speak with a medical school admissions expert. Fortunately, a medical school admissions dean agreed, and we'll speak to her momentarily. Before I introduce our guest, I would like to remind you that I am happy to answer your questions on the show. You can post your questions and comments at info.accepted.com/87, the number 87, which is the location of today's show notes, or you can email your questions to me at questions@accepted.com. Now to our guest. I'm so happy, thrilled really, to introduce Jennifer Welch. Jennifer has a BA from SUNY Potsdam and an MS in school counseling from Syracuse University. She has served as SUNY Upstate Medical University's Director of Admissions from 1994 to 2012, and in January 2013, she became the Associate Dean of Admissions and Financial Aid at SUNY Upstate Medical University. So that's just over 20 years heading up a medical school admissions office. In addition, Jennifer is the author of 101 Tips on Getting into Medical School, a succinct collection of her advice on getting accepted. We'll include a link to Jennifer's book in the show notes at info.accepted.com/87. Finally, Jennifer participated in several times in accepted chats, generously sharing her experience and knowledge of the medical school admissions process. She was a fantastic guest then, and I'm sure she'll be a fantastic guest today, as she continues the tradition of sharing her experience and insight into the medical school admissions process. Jennifer, thanks for joining me today on Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you so much for having me, Linda.
You're welcome. How did you get involved or interested in medical school admissions? I realize it was 20 years ago, but it would be interesting to know.
Sure. So I started out working in admissions at a liberal arts and science college in southern New York, and was interested in just kind of expanding my own horizons, and took a position at Upstate Medical University as an admissions counselor. At that point, I was focused primarily on our undergraduate programs in the health professions, which is like medical imaging and respiratory therapy and things like that, and just progressed on and became more and more interested in our medical school and had the opportunity to get involved in the admissions committee, and then just kind of moved myself up into the director of admissions role, where my primary responsibility was medical school admissions.
Wow.
And that was about 12 years ago. So,
and you've been focused on medical school admissions ever since. But you were telling me before we went live that, well, you actually are supervising admissions for a broader array of healthcare programs, right?
Yes. So I supervise all of the programs that we offer, health professions, physical therapy, PA, respiratory, nursing, our graduate programs, PhD and master's degree, and then also the College of Medicine here.
Wow.
And, yeah, that's my daily focus is the College of Medicine, but I do oversee all the other programs.
Got it. All right, well, we're going to focus on medical school admissions. And I think probably the thing that's most on everybody's mind, we're going to dive into some of those specific groups that I mentioned in a minute, is MCAT 2015.
Right.
How do you think the new MCAT is going to change medical school admissions, if at all?
Well, I think hopefully there's going to be a nice change. I think that for a long time there was such a focus on just knowing the sciences and just being proficient in the sciences. And I think that the new MCAT with the focus on the humanities and the social sciences is going to be an added benefit for students. I think that one of the things that we've been lacking for a long time is really a holistic approach to medicine. And I think that the new MCAT is really going to assess a different type of student. You know, for a long time we were focused on the biology and the chemistry and the organic chemistry and the physics. And I think now, you know, having the social sciences and humanities represented in the exam is going to give us a different type of medical student. And it's also going to really invite a different type of applicant. So I'm actually really looking forward to it. A little nervous, just, you know, the change is always difficult,
Right.
and just how we're going to be looking at it and assessing it compared to the old MCAT. But I'm really looking forward to the different type of applicant it might bring.
And obviously the fact, you know, that they're widening the scope of the MCAT by including the social sciences and humanities, but isn't there also a parallel goal of reducing the focus on the MCAT score and admissions? Isn't that also one of the goals of the new MCAT with the new scoring scale?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I think it's really going to allow us to do more of a holistic approach. And I think that's something that we've been trying to do for a number of years. You know, the MCAT is still important. It's still kind of a preparatory type of experience for students, especially when they get to medical school and they're taking step one, two, and eventually three. But I think it's going to really lend itself to that holistic experience that all of us have been, I think, striving for the last few years. I also like that there's going to be less of a focus on organic chemistry and more of a focus on the biochemistry,
mm-hmm.
You know, which is essentially what students are going to be doing in medical school.
Sure.
So I think that it's definitely going to allow us to focus holistically on each applicant, and looking at not only their grades in MCATs, but also all of their other experiences that they may have.
Great. Are you at all concerned about evaluating applicants, given that there are two different tests, or not really?
Yeah, you know, I think that we are. With the admissions committee, when I last spoke with them, it's about, okay, what's it going to look like, and how are we going to compare? And we're not really going to be able to compare, and we're going to have three different types of students coming up. We're going to have those that have only taken the old MCAT, those that have taken only the new MCAT, and then those that have taken both.
Right.
And, you know, evaluating them, it's going to be difficult, and we're just trying to wait and see how things start to look as the numbers come out, and then we're just going to kind of take it from there. I'm hopefully going to be participating in a presentation in the next couple of weeks to learn a little bit more. And I think we're all learning kind of as we go.
Right.
But really looking forward to what the possibilities are that it's going to present.
Okay. Now, I mentioned different groups of students calling accepted at this time of year, and we're going to have something for each of them. But let's start with a group that is preparing for a much wanted and now received interview. From your perspective as admissions director, what is the goal of the interview? What are you trying to learn?
So the goal, sure, probably as much as we can outside of the application.
Okay.
How a student conducts themselves in the interview is incredibly, incredibly important. What they know about medicine, that they've investigated the field, that they have a clear understanding of what it's all about, that they can sit with somebody and have a conversation. And have it not be awkward. That really, essentially, that they know what they're getting themselves into. And I think that that's the bottom line. For the most part, when we have screened an application, academically, they can probably handle the coursework. But it comes down to the interview and the fit. And, you know, is this somebody that we would feel comfortable going to as a healthcare provider? Is it somebody that we can see ourselves referring our parents to, our children, that type of thing? I mean, that's really what we're looking
for. Look at it. That's a wonderful way to look at it.
That's really what we're looking for.
In those kinds of personal terms.
Yes, now, absolutely.
When somebody goes to SUNY Upstate for their interview day, what is a typical interview day?
Sure. So we do build some time into the student schedules. And for some of them, I do realize it's too much time, and others it's not enough. But my primary goal is not to have them come here and just be interviewed and then leave.
Right.
The interview is really an opportunity for them to look at us just as much as we're looking at them. So my goal in bringing them in early is for them to go and sit in our classes, to have the opportunity to see how the professors teach and how they interact with the students, how the students interact with one another. I hope that they'll spend some time in the library. They'll certainly spend enough time in there once they get to medical school. So I want to be sure that it has what they're looking for, and then really just kind of, you know, look around the area and really see how they're treated and how other people treat one another. I think that that's really important. Not only, you know, do they need to find a good medical school that they're going to be able to thrive at, but they've also got to feel good about where they're going, and it's got to feel right for them, and the fit has to be right. They're going to be spending 4 years there, and if the fit doesn't jive with them, it's going to be a really, really tough 4 years. So, you know, we do build that time into their schedule. We bring them in, we feed them, we do an information session with them where, you know, I will talk to them about when they're going to hear and what they're going to hear and how the admissions committee looks at an application. We will spend time talking about our two different campuses. We will also spend time talking about some special programs. And then I always talk about financial aid and just how to afford medical school, because it can sometimes be very, very overwhelming for students to even, you know, look at those price tags. And then we take them and we do the MMI interview, and this is our third year doing that. So then we prep them for that, go through the MMI process, which is about a two-hour process, and then after that they're free to go.
When they're, let's say, in the more social aspects of interview day, whether it's, you know, it's lunch or interacting with current students, are they also being evaluated?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think that's important for students to know. You know, the other day I was actually presenting to the students, and the entire time I was presenting, there was a student texting. And, you know, those are things, it's not just about me, but it's about how are you going to treat your patients and who's going to come first. Right. And they're always being evaluated. They're being evaluated from the moment that they step foot on campus and how they're treating the support staff, how they're treating students. It's not just about the interview itself. It's the entire process that they're being evaluated on.
Thank you. I think that's absolutely critical for them to know. How do you recommend applicants prepare for the interview day at SUNY Upstate?
Well, I want it to be as real as possible. I don't want them to prepare with a buddy. I think it's really easy to hand out, you know, questions that you can find on studentdoctor.net and sit down with a buddy and say, okay, ask me this question. I think it's much more difficult to do when it's with somebody that you don't know well. So maybe using a resource that can put them through some mock interviews, ask them real questions, hold them accountable for those questions. And I also encourage them to do that in a suit. A lot of times these students, you know, they're uncomfortable in suits. They're not used to wearing them. So I try to encourage them to have a realistic approach of what it's going to be like. Walk in, shake somebody's hand, look them in the eye, you know, and then sit down and be conscious of your body language and how you're really presenting yourself. And then ask that person that you're practicing with to really give you some very, very positive and negative feedback, but be realistic in it.
Wow. Okay. Great. How does the MMI require different preparation than the traditional interview format, or does it?
You know, I don't, at least here, I can't speak for other schools that are using the MMI.
Mm-hmm.
We've essentially taken the traditional interview format and kind of broken it down into MMI types of questions.
Mm-hmm.
So here the student will get two scenario questions, and the scenario questions are not difficult scenario questions. They're essentially questions where if the student has done clinical experience, they should be able to answer the questions.
So they're
not looking for diagnosis.
They're not going to, let's say, meet with an actor who's going to act distraught or angry or anything like that. They're not going to have that. That will not be part of their MMI experience at SUNY Upstate.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. They will be, so the person asking the scenario questions will be a doc,
mm-hmm,
who, you know, practices, or it could be a fourth year medical student. But they'll be asking the question, and essentially what they're looking for is that the student has done clinical experience and has an idea about how to answer the question. There's no right or wrong answers, but essentially the student should be able to have should be able to think through the scenario well enough to be able to answer the question. The rest of our questions, there is one short answer question, and essentially we do that just to see how students can write kind of on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do the other questions are really traditional types of questions. The process, though, is broken down so that we will get a holistic evaluation of the student. So at some point, their clinical is evaluated. At some point, their interpersonal skills are communicated, their professionalism, their resilience, their, you know, level of curiosity. All of those types of things will be evaluated by a particular question that they're being asked.
Okay. And are they asked at all, like, why do they want to, you said traditional questions. I assume one of them would be, why do they want to go to SUNY Upstate, wouldn't it?
Yes, that can sometimes be one of those questions. And
they got to do their homework.
They have to do their homework, and there are so many times I will tell you that a student calls us the wrong name or they have done nothing other than read the brochure that we have given them that day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very clear if that's the only thing that they know about us. So they need to do their homework on the schools that they're looking for. They need to know some special things about the particular medical school they're interested in, and be able to articulate those things back to the interviewer.
Okay. Now, the second category of medical school applicant that I would like to address is a person who either knows or fears that he or she has been rejected. So maybe they haven't gotten interview invitations, maybe they've gotten interview invitations, but it's gone dark. Maybe they've heard they're rejected from all the schools they apply to. What should that person be doing now?
Sure. I think that, you know, probably the biggest thing, if a student doesn't get an interview, there must be something going on in their academics.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be any number of things. It could be, you know, their undergraduate GPA went down every single semester and it ended on a rather low GPA. It could be an inconsistency between their undergraduate GPA and their MCAT. But primarily, it would have to do with something academic. The other thing could be if they don't have any clinical work.
Right.
Those two things are probably the biggest things that we're looking for. I would say probably 65% of our decision is based on grades and MCATs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if a student didn't perform well, or they have one semester where it's, you know, incredibly, if they had a really difficult semester and there's no explanation as to why, that could be something that kind of keeps them back. Clinical work is the other thing. I would say if a student hasn't heard and is still kind of on a wait list or a hold before interview, that they maybe address some of those things and send an email if they're accepted to the medical schools that they're looking at, you know, identifying some of the limitations in their application and how they've grown from it. You know, somebody who didn't do well in a sophomore year of college, but there's no mention of it, they're going to want to address that. And, okay, you know, I had some difficulty. I overextended myself. I had, you know, a sickness in the family. Whatever it is, it's real, and we are all humans, and we're all going through a lot of the same types of things at some points in our lives. But you need to address it, and you need to point it out, and you need to say, okay, this is what happened, and not make an excuse for it, but this is where I am now. And so those are the types of things that even now, students that are, you know, waitlisted or have been rejected here but might have other open applications other places, that's what I'm encouraging them to do.
Okay. What would cause someone with a GPA and MCAT scores basically in the ballpark to be rejected? Now, you mentioned lack of clinical experience. I guess that would probably be number one, but are there other things? Another thing would be the interview.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and that happens every single year where a student has great GPA, great MCATs, but they don't do well in the interview. Or they get through the process, and then we're looking at their clinical experience, and it's superficial clinical experience. You know,
What's an
every
example
year
of superficial clinical experience?
I, every year I have an example, or I have a student that applies who, you know, one of their clinical experiences might be donating blood. And this happens every single year. Donating blood is not an extracurricular activity. It's not a clinical experience. Quite frankly, if you're going into medical school, it is something that you do. It's kind of expected. So, you know, if they have 2 hours of clinical experience, or they are children of physicians, and their only real clinical experience is sitting with mom or dad, or mom and dad at the dinner table, and talking about what they did that day, that's not the same thing that we're looking for. So, you know, it can kind of go any way, but I definitely think that if they are rejected, there could be letters of recommendation, and unfortunately we can't share that, you know, with them. But there are some red flags. And sometimes their personal statement could lead to that. It really depends on how much they're sharing with us. I like to talk to students when I go out and I do advising and things like that. One of the things that I tell students is their application is their resume. And there can't be any issues in it. There can't be any grammatical issues. There can't be any spelling issues. There can't be, you know, I read another application the other day where a student, it was one long paragraph on her personal statement. That's it. And we won't read them. And, you know, so you need to pay attention to everything, because there are lots and lots of reasons why, you know, if you're not paying attention to the details on your application, the question becomes, will they not pay attention to the details of their patients?
Right. That's, again, excellent way to look at it. I always hear a lot of talk about personal brand among applicants, particularly in the MBA world. And personal brand is basically what used to be called reputation.
It's yeah.
How you present yourself. And I guess the presentation of their reputation or personal brand is their application, as far as you're concerned. When you don't have anything. Yeah, you have the transcript, but transcript and MCAT are part of the application. So that's
absolutely
them. Yeah. Until they're invited to interview. Now,
absolutely.
The last group I would like to. Oh, I had one more question on the whole superficial experience thing. How do you view shadowing a physician, let's say for a couple of weeks, or like 3 months volunteering in the ER?
I think that, you know, that what we're looking for is shadowing experiences, and that they can clearly articulate what they've seen.
Okay.
We don't have a set number of hours that we're looking for. But one of the things that I ask students to do, particularly, we do see a lot of EMS students or EMTs or
right.
paramedics, or but particularly the EMS students, one of the things I do encourage them to do is to get some direct physician shadowing. They've got some incredible, you know, patient shadowing, but it's kind of like, you know, they roll up to the ER, they drop off the student and or the patient, and then that's it. So I really encourage them to get out there and get some additional shadowing experiences. We want them to be able to articulate how a physician interacts with their patients, how the physician interacts with the family of the patients, how the physician interacts with the other health professionals on the team, and really that they really know what a day in the life is like. So again, there's no set number of hours. A lot of times those students will come and they'll say, well, how do I even begin? You know, I don't have anybody in my family who's a doctor. I don't know anybody. And I always encourage them to go back to their own doctors,
right.
whether it's a family doc or a pediatrician or, you know, an orthopedic surgeon or a gynecologist. I mean, whoever it is that they've had any type of experience with, to go back and just say to that person, you know what, I'm interested in applying to medical school. I need to get some clinical experience. Can I come and shadow you for a couple of hours? One of the things that a lot of students will do is say, I want to come and shadow you for 3 months. And that scares those clinicians, you know, tremendously. So if they can start out slowly and get in there and show that they have a real interest, that's going to lead to more experiences. That's going to lead to, you know, oh, I have a friend that does cardiology. You know, when you were with me the other day, you suggested that you had an interest in that. Let me get you in touch with them to spend a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will just kind of branch out if they do it that way.
So shadowing is a very good complement, perhaps, to other experience.
Absolutely. But the student needs to have a variety of experiences. So you've got the shadowing and you've got the clinical experience, and then, you know, one of the other things that we're always looking for is service.
Right.
And dedicating, you know, your time to serving other people, because essentially that's what you're going to be doing as a physician. You're going to be dedicating your life to serving other people. And oftentimes students will come in and, you know, I'll say to them, so why do you want to be a doctor? And they'll essentially say, oh, because I want to help people. Well, you need to have some history in your life about helping other people. And, you know, it just can't be, oh, this is what I thought about today. There has to be evidence in your application and in your background that suggests that that's really what you want to do. So service is also a huge part, and then extracurricular involvement is going to be a huge part. You know, we're not looking for students to give up their families and things like that to get involved, and I certainly don't want students to get over-involved, but what I want them to do is find something that they're clearly passionate about and that, you know, kind of keeps them balanced between their academics and their, and really their kind of outlets. So getting involved on campuses, getting a job, running, whatever it is that they really kind of find to keep them motivated is certainly something that we want to have them continue to do.
Okay. Now, the last group I would like to address today are 2016 medical school applicants, those applying this summer, who did not submit an application in this application cycle. Maybe this applicant is a bright-eyed newbie, either a college senior or someone who did a gap year, or perhaps started initially down a different path, career path. Perhaps he or she applied two or more years ago and is trying again now after a post-bac program or, you know, informal, formal, whatever. What do you feel is the most important advice you can give them, those who are just about to launch in a couple of months their MCAS application?
Well, I think that that's probably the most important piece that you just said right there is getting them in early.
Right.
And I think that that's something that students don't, you know, really don't really know or understand. But rolling admission is, it means that as an application comes in, it's reviewed and then it's put into, you know, either the interview category or the hold category, or it's denied. And, you know, at the beginning of the cycle, many of us have multiple interview dates available, but the later we get, obviously those numbers are going down. So that's one of the things that I often find, that students will wait until the deadline to submit an application, and they could be the best, you know, academic, they could be have wonderful MCAT scores, but they get their application in late and there's no interview places available at that point. So I think getting an application in early is absolutely paramount. I think the other thing is that particularly those that had a gap year or had applied 2 years previous, that they're very clear about what they've been doing since they either previously applied or graduated from college, that, you know, to address the experiences that they had, maybe why they took a gap year, what they've learned in the year about themselves. I would say that more and more of our students are doing that. Probably more than 50% of our students are taking gap years,
mm-hmm.
Or are coming back after, you know, a career change or something like that.
So and non-traditional so really, become traditional.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it brings a level of maturity with it. It brings a level of real-world experience with it. So those are all really positive things. For the person that may have applied a couple of years ago, the biggest thing is to really focus on that new application, particularly if he or she has applied to the institution that, you know, they're reapplying to. That application has to be completely different from the one that they first submitted. Many times students will submit the same personal statement, they'll submit the same experiences without changing it. And my response is always, if it didn't work the first time,
exactly,
it's not going to work the second.
Right.
And, you know, so I really encourage students to be very thoughtful in putting their application together, and to think about things that they may not think are really related. Let me just give you an example. A lot of times students will leave off like experiences like being a waiter or a waitress, working at a summer camp, you know, all of those types of things. They'll leave them off because they don't think they're relevant to medicine. And, you know, my response is always, I want to know as much as I can about you when I'm evaluating your application. And, you know, how you got to this point, what you've done to get here. And, you know, I want to know if you were a waiter or a waitress because it tells me a lot about you. It tells me you can handle difficult people. It tells me you can manage your time. It tells me you can work as a team. It tells me you can work independently. You know, there are a lot of different things that students might not think when they're really looking at their experiences or their job experience or their clinical experience as relevant. And it's all relevant in how you present it to the admissions committee.
Right, right. I was just thinking as you were talking about a couple of clients I had, these were years and years ago, where I think one was on a master's swim team, and she just didn't think it was important. And yet she was committing, you know, an hour a day to swimming and managing her time and all that. And then another time I was working with, I think, if I recall correctly, she was a waitlisted medical school student. And she came back to me and she said, and I said, well, what are you doing? What's going on? Just, you know, kind of small talk with her. And she said, well, I started a business. And I don't remember what the business was anymore. And I said, well, that's great. And I said, and then, you know, we turned to updating the school as to her, what's going on in her life while she's on the wait list. And she had absolutely no intention of mentioning that.
Oh, my goodness. I said, that's huge.
I know. It shows so much initiative, creativity, energy, all these wonderful things. Yeah. I said, you trying to keep this a secret? I mean.
Oh, my gosh. And then if they don't do that, then you're wondering what they're doing with their time. So it's so important to just put all of that and figure out the best way to present it all on the application.
Right, right. And let's take a second, and since I did touch upon the waitlisted applicants, do you at SUNY Upstate, do you want to hear from waitlisted applicants if they have something to tell you?
Well, so if they are on a hold before interview, updated information will help. But if they are on one of the alternate lists after they've been interviewed, we don't review them a second time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who looks at it? Me. I don't present it back to the admissions committee because they're already reviewed and ranked by the rest of the admissions committee. So the only person that's going to see it is me, and it's not going to change where they fall on the wait list. Now, other schools do that, but it really depends on the school that they're applying to.
And I assume you would let the applicant know that it's a rank wait list, and, you know, just...
I do that. Yeah. During the interview day, I do say to them that, you know, if there's any new material or any new updates they want to share, that to send them to me because I want to be able to present the most accurate and up-to-date applicant that I can to the rest of the admissions committee, but that they'll only be reviewed one time.
Got it. Any insights for those, let's say, in their freshman or sophomore years of college who plan to apply to medical school?
Sure. I would say, first of all, in terms of extracurricular involvement, to get involved, but to know what their limits are and to not get overly involved. I think that's a really easy thing to do.
Right.
And to be realistic in terms of the time commitments that things will take. And then academic, to really do the best that they can. If, though, for some reason they perform poorly in one class, I want them to know that it's not the end of the world. They can turn it around. They can change it. But the other thing I don't want them to do is to retake a class where they might have gotten a C. We find that a lot of times where a student will take general biology or general chemistry and take it over again because they received a C in it, they'll take it over and get an A, but it's averaged when they apply through the AAMC. So the best grade they're going to get in that course is going to be a B. I would much rather them take more advanced science coursework and perform well in those courses than to go back and retake any classes that, you know, that they might have received a C or a B in. But to get some clinical shadowing, another thing is we don't want students to wait until right before applying to get some shadowing. We want to know that this is something that they've been thinking about for a while and planning for a while. So, you know, I think it's just thinking about the end result and getting as much experience under their belt as they can without going overboard. And then, you know, to the detriment of their courses and their test scores and all of that.
Yeah, the delicate balance. Any last words of advice for medical school applicants approaching the process for the first or second or X time, hopefully not too high next?
Sure. I think that, you know, it's really important that they prepare the best application that they can. Sometimes students will say, well, I wasn't sure if I wanted to apply, so I just decided to. Please don't do that. Make sure that this is the right time for you to apply. Don't rush it. It will come, but I don't want students to put forth a poor application because they're trying to rush it. I would rather students spend the time, take a year or whatever amount of time it's going to take to put together the best application that they can with the clinical experience, with research if they're interested, with you know, volunteer work or extracurricular activities, put together the best personal statement that they can. I don't want a reiteration of their MCAS application in their personal statement. I want something new. I want a story. I want to hear about who they are and what they're all about. And I also really want to encourage them to apply early. I think that I can't stress that enough. But to get their application in and have it be the best one that they could put forth.
That's great. Thank you. Wonderful advice. Jennifer, I think we're out of time. You've been, as usual, incredibly informative and very generous with your time. Where can listeners learn more about SUNY Upstate's Medical University?
Sure, they can go to upstate.edu/com.
Great. And we'll include links in the show notes at info.accept.com/87, both to the SUNY Upstate site as well as to the second edition of Jennifer Welch's book, 101 Tips on Getting into Medical School. Listeners, thank you too for joining us for this, our 87th episode. If you found this show helpful, can I ask a favor? Could you please leave your feedback on iTunes? It helps us get ranked more highly if there are more reviews, especially when they are 5-star reviews. And if you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.